Yeah, I went down to metallurgy. 15 of us.
And 15?
15 students.
15 students.
We had to start first grade. There was about 8 or 10 of us who did it in electrical. And some of them were, you know, became good friends. And when I became the audio, I all sold them sets. And, went to metallurgy. It's like company were there, Alcan and others. They were just waiting on us hand and foot, you know. They were really short.
Because electrical engineering was too competitive. It was
flooded, no doubt. I don't know. It's an unlimited, in one sense, it was an unlimited field as it expanded. But, metallurgical was, I mean, Canada, metals, everything's there in Canada. And they had such a shortage, because everything's also quite rural. I mean, really rural. When I went off once to Manitoba, Flin Flon, Manitoba, up in Lynn Lake, it was like the end of the world. It was by the Northwest Territories. It was so far up. There were no roads or anything. There was just trains that took the ore off, and you had to fly in. Everything got flown in. Everything. But anyway. Krishna consciousness.
We got there from because of the microphones. I'm trying to figure out how we got to electrical engineering. It was because of the microphones.
Yeah. We stuttered off with the mics. When I just before I joined, I went and. What did I have? I can't remember. They had cassettes. I mean, they were gold, and Prabhupada's lectures and cassettes, and I went to buy a cassette player. I mean, they were barbaric.
Panasonic, the old Panasonic cassette players, I remember. In the early 70s, the one that
big,
they were long boxes, like box shape.
They weren't even battery driven ones. I just got one for my wife because I was trying to set her up in Krishna consciousness with things of Prabhupada, whatever was available, although there was not much available. Yeah, it was. Cassette recorder just came out on the market. Things move. Things really happened.
Too fast.
And some people really, really got in, made money. So, here we are with Gop Kumar, and I didn't have my place.
I remember where we were. 218.
218?
Yeah.
218.
We were reading about the difference of mentalities between the Gopas and the Gopis.
Page 218.
No, text 218, chapter 6.
Oh. Yeah. Chapter 4, chapter 5, chapter 6. We're recording?
Yeah.
That's okay. 218.
Yeah.
There's no 218.
Hey, you have the wrong volume then.
I got volume 3. Oh no, I got part 1. It was to the right.
If you use mine, I'll get my Kindle. I'll just take a second.
Okay.
Oh, actually, no, I can just use my phone. I have it right here.
Really? It's not small for you?
No, not at all. I use my phone for a lot.
I didn't look. I just was over on the right-hand side. Shabby Harry's got volume 2. And,
let's see.
218.
Yeah.
Okay, all the gopis. All the gopis partake of that exalted and most perfect love, and they all constantly know the pleasure of Krishna's never-ending chain of pastimes, yet none of the gopis even imagines that Krishna has special love for her. I'll skip the commentary. Each of them thinks, oh, when will I be fortunate enough to become even the lowliest maidservant of Krishna? Commentary. The ambition of every young gopi in Goloka is to someday gain the good fortune to be allowed to enter Krishna's service, even in the lowest position. Such utter humility distinguishes them from the young gopas and the male cowherds, who tend to consider themselves Krishna's favorites and presume themselves very fortunate. The gopas often feel dissatisfied with themselves for various reasons due to the nature of the exalted love for Krishna. They then become anxious to be better servants of Krishna. The gopis love, however, are on the highest level of perfection. They are never satisfied with themselves, for their humility is absolute. Each of them considers herself Krishna's worst maidservant, her only hope being to somehow be permitted to continue serving him despite her disqualifications. In this way, the moods of the gopas and gopis are different. The devotees of Narayana and Sri Vaikuntha also never feel they have had enough of the ecstasy of worshipping Lord's lotus feet, but every one of them assumes that the all-powerful personality of Godhead is completely merciful to all of them without discrimination. The Golokavasis cannot think like that. It's really far out. Today I was sort of meditating on, this reply of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji to some Radhakund Babaji's that, you know, what is our Siddha Pranali? And he said, our Siddha Pranali is Trinadapi Sunichena. This is Trinadapi Sunichena. It's that utter humility which only the gopis possess and becomes the qualification for gopi bhav. And kirtaniya shadahari, and to be able to do that kind of kirtan, nam sankirtan, that's laden with mood of separation, love in separation, service in separation.
That was Gaur Kishore Das Babaji?
Mm.
I always attributed that quote, because I say that a lot, I attribute it to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said it, that Trinadapi Sunichena was a Siddha Pranali.
Yeah, I originally heard that it was from Gaur Kishore, which then if he repeats what his Guru Maharaj says.
Yeah.
That was my understanding. So yeah, how is that? It's because, and then where does he start talking about the, no, that's Nard who's talking about this utter humility, Dainya and Prema, and how they're actually connected. But, you know, this chanting like that here and practicing that, which is, we're saying, when you in a management role becomes very difficult because you have this Ishvara above. And it can become a real obstacle. You know, if you're a husband, you have an Ishwar above. If you're guru, you don't have Ishwar above. Think I'm the guru, unless you think I'm the servant. But it's difficult because you also got to be training them at the same time.
We still can think of I'm the servant and I'm the guru at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's practically the only way to survive.
Yeah, it's a balancing act. And Trinayada Peace and Ichena. And this is actually our Siddha Pranali. You can have a Siddha Pranali like the Sannyas Mantra or some other mantra. But ultimately the whole idea of the mantra is to guide you. It's guiding you somewhere. It's guiding you to Siddha, to perfection. But Trinada Pisunichena, and how can better mantra? It's coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mouth, lotus mouth. And it's sort of the order that it comes in is the third shloka of Shikshashtakam is also significant, considering that the verses after really start with a different type of mood, with a mood of separation. And the real aspiration after Krishna and the mood of the gopis. And it's a Siddha Pranali that's available to everyone. Kaviraj Goswami says, wear it around your neck, but we just don't give it that label. Now the question is whether devotees really wear it around their necks. And
string it on the thread of the holy name. Wear it on one's neck for constant remembrance.
Yeah. Constant remembrance. So that we're trying to cultivate reflection of humility here, dānya. And these four... these attributes for qualifications.
So you were kind of just briefly alluding that institutions sometimes, because of the social interaction that is required for maintaining the structure of the institution, it inhibits, or suggesting that it inhibits that...
Yeah.
That ability to actually fully manifest dānya.
Yeah, any type of identity, any type of what's it called?
Upadhi.
Ego, huh?
Upadhi.
No, there's another word that can be upadhi is automatically. Sort of a negative connotation. This goes either way, and in any case, all of these, any role that you're in, where you're really not the servant. That's why it's so much safer just to be than immediately either. Being in charge or, running a family and doing so many things, running a business.
What devotees have the most difficult time, my understanding, in their expression of humility is because they see imperfections in the displayed by those to whom they're supposed to be humble.
That's humility. When everyone's perfect, then it's easy to be humble. But I'm humble because that's my sadhana. And whether I'm before others and others may be imperfect, but what can we expect in a big spiritual organization?
I always refer to Haridas Pandit Chaitanya Charitamrita, how he's described as what's the word that Kaviraj Goswami uses? Adosha Darshi.
Who's never seen a fault?
It never sees a fault in anyone.
Gopal Bhatta Goswami, like that also, and would never listen to anything, either valid or not valid. Anyway, it'll come to me.
With the word you're looking for?
Oh, my Lord, it is amazing how intently these devotees are absorbed in the fathomless rasa of pure love. The exalted nature of their mood is incomprehensible even to great sages. One day while playing on the shore of Jamuna, Lord Krishna, and then that's it. Then it goes on. Nandanandan heard that Kaliya had come back to his lake. Commentary. The lake in which Kaliya once stayed continued to be known as Kaliyarhada, Kaliya's lake, even after his expulsion from Braj. Krishna rushed there alone, swiftly climbed a nipa tree, and dived into the lake, splashing water onto the shore. Commentary. Krishna thought it wise not to bring his companions with him to Kaliya's lake, which had become poisoned again. He was also concerned that they might try to stop him from jumping into the lake. The vigorous way Krishna dived is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, quote, when the Supreme Personality of God had landed in the serpent's lake, the snakes there became extremely agitated and began breathing heavily, further polluting it with volumes of poison. The force of the Lord's entrance into the lake made it overflow on all sides, and poisonous, fearsome waves flooded the surrounding lands up to a distance of 100 bow lengths. This is not at all amazing, however, for the Supreme Lord possesses infinite strength. Krishna frolicked in the water, enjoyed the sport of swimming back and forth and making all sorts of loud noises. But then he drew near the cruel Kaliya, and out of curiosity allowed himself to be enveloped in the serpent's coils. Commentary. When Krishna played in the water, the noise he created was not ordinary. It sounded like very pleasing music. When Krishna's companions, the cowherd boys, saw that for no good reason he was gone, they all became as if struck down by death. In great anxiety to find him, they followed his footprints to the lake. Commentary. At first, the cowherd boys had no idea where Krishna might have gone, and they didn't know what to do. But soon they noticed footprints leading out of the village. Those footprints could not have been those of anyone but Krishna, because they had special marks such as a flag and an elephant goat leading out of the village, but they were already out of the village. They had sort of took shelter into the forest and were even beyond earshot. Anyway. Abhiman. Abhiman means sort of self-conception. And it applies to false ego, and can apply to the pure ego. Gopis have the abhiman, the identity that I'm just the lowest servant.
But isn't it also manifest in the mood of the gopis sometimes to think that they're getting special attention?
Well, it was in the rasa dance, yeah. Yeah.
That's why I was kind of confused by that.
It's a question of whether when Sukadeva Goswami says, is he talking about everybody, or is he talking about
certain gopis?
Yeah, the Sadaka Siddhas. And that their, you know, their final sort of purification, Sadhana Siddhas, could certainly be thinking like that, or the Nitya Siddha Gopis think like that or not. But if they do, then it's just Yoga Maya's arrangement, I guess, for that other type of pastime for Krishna to leave. But so many things. I mean, sometimes Radharani becomes very proud. She becomes Manini. She becomes very angry, Man. And their psychology is also that when, for instance, Krishna goes to Mathura or Dwarka, they're thinking, we know that Krishna is not fully happy with the queens because the queens don't know how to satisfy him like we do. Therefore, they're very unhappy because they think that Krishna's not fully happy, fully satisfied.
It's hard to combine those two.
Then the question is that Vasudev Krishna is also an Aishwarya Bhav. So is he really dissatisfied? Well, he's dissatisfied. We read about it in the first volume. He feels, you know, he's the same Krishna, but he's different. So where does this dissatisfaction and search for gopis come from in him when, you know, everyone's satisfied with their service to Krishna?
It's the same
and
point.
Krishna's
the same point we were discussing last time. I know it's. You would think they'd pick up on it. Which would somehow inhibit their full satisfaction. You know, like...
But one thing is what's in the devotees, and the other one is, well, what about Krishna? How is this working in him? And he's Vasudev Krishna. He's not Rajendra Nandan Krishna. But he's still the same Krishna. But he's not manifesting all those qualities. He's got no flute. Of course, he doesn't have the gopis, and he doesn't have that mood. So why is it coming up? Why isn't he satisfied?
I guess the only explanation is because he's Rasaraj.
He's Krishna.
He's Krishna Rasaraj, which means that he can fully manifest fully to the residents of Mathura and Dwarka and in such a way, but at the same time still in his heart feeling there's more to be gotten from the associates of Raj. But then you would think that the residents of Dwarka and Mathura would sense that, and that would inhibit their full satisfaction.
Well, the Dwarkavasis do know it because they hear him crying.
And they're talking about it too.
Yeah.
And Satyabhama is talking about it. Rukmini is talking about it outside in Krishna's room. And
back on Krishna's side, because there's only one of him. So even though because he becomes unmanifest, that feature becomes unmanifest when he leaves Vrindavan, and then Vasudev Krishna takes over. But when Radharani leaves Vrindavan, she becomes Satyabhama. When Chandra, so they can have really distinct, different identities and wants, because now they've taken on a different form. But here, this Krishna is the one.
But he's Vasudev Krishna. He's not, because Krishna.
But he's still the same one. It's a good thing we got this Achintya Kaluji Baba.
Achintya, what's that verse?
Achintya Kaluji Baba Nata Tarkina Yojaya.
Yes, yes, right. Mundaka Upanishad. I'm thinking of the verse from Mundaka Upanishad.
No, this is Mahabharata. Mundaka Upanishad is...
Naktakina Yogjiyat.
Oh.
Achinchikalo ye baba naktakina yogjiyat.
That's what I was... What the Mahabharata is...
No, I think...
Sabhava Gyana Kriya Cha.
No, that's Balasya Cham. Hiri Sandavishto. No. Balasya. Parasya Shakti Vividhai Vishuyate Sabhava Gyana Bala Kriya Cha.
Matasya Karyam Karam.
That's Vishnu Purana.
Anyway, watch out. This is all being recorded. Okay, back to Krishna Lila.
So we're just going to stop there on that one, right? Vasudev Krishna.
I'm sure we'll continue it some other time.
But it's all Krishna. Yes, it's all Krishna, but Vasudev Krishna. Because Krishna, you know, who satisfies the gopis and the cowherd boys and his Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda, never leaves Vrindavan.
Why is Vasudev Krishna hankering to become Nandanandan Krishna? Is Lord Narayan hankering to become Nandanandan Krishna? He manifests Krishna form to Gop Kumar, but we never read about him not being satisfied being Narayan.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Dwarka, at least in this earthly Leela, Krishna's dissatisfied. Does this happen in Goloka? Never read what happens in Goloka. Is Krishna dissatisfied? Does he come back? I mean, there's Rath Yatra, but that's in Purushottam Kshetra.
Well, in Goloka, Krishna's coming back again and again and again and again and again. According to the description of Bihad Bhagavatamrita, he goes, takes care of Kamsa, comes back, then he goes, takes care of Kamsa.
That was Mathura. Yeah.
He goes to Mathura, yeah. Comes back. And it's simply happening again and again and again, repeatedly, and there's no past, there's no future in the minds of the residents of Gokul, of Goloka, because they're thinking it's simply like a dream that he's...
The Mathura, Vrindavan falls into the area of Mathura. Krishna's mood in Mathura, you could say, doesn't change. You know, it may, once Nanda Maharaj goes back, and then he goes to Sandipani, and then he's actually there for 25 odd years. and Kubja and so on come into.
Are we talking about Goloka or Gokul now?
I guess both. Well, we're talking about Gokul.
Gokul.
Yeah. So here, there, it just seems like he comes and goes. He never goes that far. He doesn't head off to Sandipani Muni. He doesn't do these other things. He just goes there, and then. Yeah, they talk about him getting second initiation, getting first initiation, or second initiation. And but he comes back. He doesn't stay that long. It's just killing Kamsa and that's it. So there the Bhav remains the same. But yeah, why is he dissatisfied? Why isn't he satisfied being Dwarkadish? And what kind of deal do they get? That's not the way it is in Vaikuntha. No one's thinking, well, actually, he wants to be with others. There, you know, everyone's just in bliss that the Lord is fully reciprocating with them. Here, Krishna's attention is to somebody else. And then he tells his wife, the only reason I married you was because Rukmini wrote me a nice letter. Otherwise, I never wanted to get married. Do we go further?
No.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
It is. It's inconceivable. I guess it demonstrates the depth of Krishna's personality.
Unlimited. Like unlimited ocean.
Yeah. Anybody thinks they can encapsulate Krishna's personality?
Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Brahma says, you know that verse also.
Shriya.
Someone may say that they know Krishna. As far as I'm concerned, I don't. This Bhagavatam verse, not Brahma Samhita.
Yeah, I know the verse you're referring to, but I can't remember the exact quote.
He Prabhu. I know one word out of it. Okay. You go ahead, the many young friends.
These many young friends were the same boys who, losing sight of Krishna on the forest paths for but a moment, would lose their will to live. And now when they saw him motionless, they all fainted. Commentary. The footprints led the boys to the lake, but there they saw Krishna immobilized and wrapped in the serpent's coils. And Krishna and the boys had been on excursions in the forest, and Krishna had passed for even a moment behind a tree, and the boys couldn't see him. The boys would lose all enthusiasm for living. And now to see Kaliya about to... Sorry. And now to see Kaliya about to kill Krishna filled them with dread. All the village animals, the cows, the bulls, the calves, also the animals of the forest stood on the shore, eyes fixed on Krishna's face, and their cries made a great roar of suffering. Birds, exhausted from loudly crying, flew precipitously into the lake. Trees and plants suddenly dried up, and many terrible inauspicious omens appeared. Commentary. All creatures, including the birds and plants, agonized over Krishna's predicament. They were all on the verge of death. The earth trembled amidst other portentous omens. Quote, in the Vrindavan area, There then arose all three types of fearful omens, those on the earth, those in the sky, and those in the bodies of living creatures, which announced imminent danger. Translation. Inspired by Lord Krishna from within, the old man went running to the cowherd village.
The old man?
One old man.
Oh.
Sorry. Yeah, one old man went running to the cowherd village. He wept and made dreadful cries of alas, alas, and told the cowherds what was happening. Commentary. Sri Nanda and the other cowherds, having seen the bad omens and received no news about Krishna, were about to die from anxiety. To relieve their suffering, Krishna telepathically inspired an old cowherd to go tell them of the situation. Had Krishna not ordered him in that way, the old man would not have had the strength to run back to Raj. We're talking about Goloki here, right? Who's the old cowherd?
One old man. But this telepathy...
Krishna is Prabhu, the Lord.
I guess telepathy is better because you could say, well, he's in the heart, but if he was in the heart...
Then it implies the super soul.
Yeah. Or even that he's the Supreme Lord, even if he's in the heart. And so he's got power of telepathy, and that's, he's exercising that. Go ahead, Krishna is Prabhu.
Krishna is Prabhu, the Lord, so he can empower anyone to do anything. He made an old person his messenger because an elder's words are less likely to interfere with anyone's intimate ras and more likely to be trusted. Rasa. More likely to be trusted.
Because an elder's words are less likely to interfere with anyone's intimate ras and more likely to be trusted. You understand what that means?
No.
Like understand he's more trustworthy and that people will take his words more seriously.
I guess because he's neither a cowherd boy nor a gopi. So therefore it's not going to interfere with the rasa. I don't...
More likely to be trusted is understandable. The other, that politics. Mm-hmm.
Actually, the desperation of Rajavasis felt over seeing evil omens and having no news about Krishna was designed to increase their special love for him. Surely they would come quickly to Kaliya's lake when they learned he was there.
This whole concept that Krishna is, it's so fascinating that I have my children, I have my home, I have my husband and wife, but this one person is more dear than anybody else who's not my son, who's not a family member, who's, you know, son of the prince. It's so foreign to what goes on here in the world. I mean, I ask mothers, for instance, in New Vrajadam, who do you love more, Sham or your son? You know, they honestly reply. They have to say there's children. And, you know, we try and sort of whitewash that a little because they're devotees. But they're devotees here. Still, that it has to come to that. That he's number one.
Well, isn't it that he's number one first, and therefore everything else, all the other varieties, are just there to enhance the various tastes?
Yeah.
In other words,
yeah.
First and foremost, he's number one.
I mean, in one sense, it's, you know, ultimate in selfishness. Person could accuse like that. I mean, you know, she's the source, was, you know, just self-centered and God created everyone. Everyone's there to serve him. But he's also in the mood of serving, and especially the stronger the love is, then the more he's inclined to actually be their servant, driving Arjuna's chariot. Dehi padapallavam buddharam, serving Srimati Radharani's lotus feet, or the gopis, and because that's how the relationship builds. If it's not like that, then this whole idea of who is, because that's where enjoyment comes from. He is the enjoyer, Bhuktaram.
He is the
enjoyer. Enjoyer is as unique to him as the word Supreme Lord is unique to him. But and when you try and usurp that role, then everything falls apart. And when like that, then you really enjoy. What was it he said? He said Ananda was the internal and Sukha was the external manifestation of Ananda. We read that.
We read that the other night. Yeah.
Okay.
People of the cowherd village had already noticed many frightening omens. Krishna was the source of Raja's good fortune, and the cowherds, frantic with concern for him, had already started out to seek him. Commentary: the Vrajavasis knew that as long as Krishna was safe, nothing bad would ever happen. The evil portents might therefore indicate that Krishna was in great danger. With this terrible thought in mind, they all went at once to look for him. They were already outside the village when the old messenger met them. Translation: the added force of the old man's report, spoken with a voice choking in his throat, struck them like a sudden lightning bolt. Commentary: the shock of hearing that Kaliya had returned and was again holding Krishna in his coils was unbearable.
Okay, returned. Let me see the Sanskrit. Puna, again. Puna pravayasa of the old man, tasya chokam, on them. I guess Puna refers that he's back again. Okay, but they forgot. So what is this again? It was already there earlier that one day Kaliya again returned.
I guess it's just the Gopakumaras. For him, it's again because he heard about it before. Because it's Gopakumara speaking.
Yeah, and he's now he's down here, so he's got a different perspective. Balaram,
who was sitting in his house, tried to console the people of Raj, who were running forward like living corpses. "This can't be true," cried out. "This can't be true." Balaram somehow told his mother, Rohini, of the news, got her to stay back to watch the house, and ran to catch up with those who had left. Commentary. Knowing the power of his younger brother Krishna, Balaram couldn't believe that Kaliya had defeated him. Balaram came out of the house and ran into the street spontaneously shouting, "This can't be true." Seeing the Vrajavasis hurrying on their way to join the search for Krishna, Balaram tried to calm them, and he had to speak to his mother before he left. So he was one of the last to arrive on the scene.
Why did he tell her to watch the house? What's to watch? And this is up in Nandagram, so I don't know if the guards all took off as well, but the soldiers up there, there's all kinds of things going on. She's.
You want to read?
He soon reached the lake. Seeing his younger brother in such a state, he couldn't keep his gravity and wept in the distress of love. Verse, as he lamented in ways that would shatter logs and stones, suddenly he fainted just like Yashoda and Nanda. Commentary. In the bewildering commotion, Yashoda and Nanda had already fainted and fallen to the ground. Verse. Then all living beings there made a great and fearful cry, full of agony that made the whole universe cry in pain. Awakened by that tumult, Balaram, the most determined of heroes, with great effort steadied himself. A moment later, Krishna's parents again became conscious. Seeing their son in such a plight, they cried loudly and rushed into the lake, but powerful Sri Balaram held them back with the strength of his arms. Commentary, taken all of Lord Balaram's mental strength to convince his mother to stay home, and now took all his physical strength to restrain Nanda and Yashoda.
Interesting. Took a lot of physical strength to keep his mother, convince his mother to stay home. Then must have been a very, very compelling reason for her to stay there.
Yeah. Why has he got to convince her to stay? Thieves are going to come? Or, yeah, maybe. Village is empty. Who knows what can happen? You stay here. Keep an eye out on, I don't know, the deity, the cooking, the, who knows what.
There must have been a reason why he didn't want her there. Yeah. Not maybe that it was so compelling that she stay home because of protecting something at home, but because he didn't want her there. That must have been the compelling reason.
He didn't want to see her in that condition, to see Krishna in that condition. He thought Yashoda and Nanda were already going to be enough of a handful. An additional, yeah, having an additional hysterical mother.
Yeah.
Seeing everyone unconscious on the ground as if dead, Balaram was overcome with sorrow. In a voice choked with emotion, he called out to Krishna. Shri Baladev Uvacha. Shri Baladev said, "These are not the attendants who live with you in Vaikuntha. They are not force monkeys. They are not Yadavas. These are your devotees of Goloka who have no life other than you. They're dying, my lord, and there's nothing I can do to save them. Okay, well, on one side we understand that for them Krishna being in danger is a different issue than everyone else. But what about them dying? And go loco.
What, the very concept, you mean?
Yeah.
But that concept is very prevalent.
Yeah, I mean, form of speech and, you know, rasa, and it's a, even a symptom of Vipralamba, but, you know, who's dying in Goloka besides Kamsa? And even commentary. Here Balaram reminds Krishna that Goloka devotees are different from Krishna's other eternal associates, his Vaithavanta Parishadas, his monkey soldiers of Ayodhya, like Hanuman, and the Yadus of Dwarka, like Uddhav. More than all these devotees, the Goloka Vasis are exclusively dependent on Krishna. The Lord's devotees in Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, and Dwarka, being always aware of Krishna's omnipotence, manage to tolerate separation from him, and so they could have responded favorably to Balaram's consoling words. But the hearts of these Golokavasis, under the intolerable weight of their prema, have lost all equilibrium. The Golokavasis cannot accurately estimate Krishna's power, so they are convinced that Kaliya is about to finish him. If Krishna himself does not act to relieve them, surely they will die. Okay.
It seems like just like this talks of demons in Goloka, but they don't exist. This talks of death in Goloka, but it doesn't exist.
Yes, certainly it adds to the pathos of the situation, emphasizes things to him, and after all, it's Boma Leela, it's Nara Leela. O merciful Krishna, please give up this game before these devotees die. Otherwise, O Krishna, so friend of the cowherds, your gentle heart will come to grief. You're going to regret it. Commentary, Krishna is the reservoir of all rasas, and so he feels pathos, so covering the ras. But although he enjoys the sport of pretending to be lifeless, his devotees are driven to desperation by it. If he doesn't stop this sport, he will be the last one to lament when all his devotees have died. Lord Balaram is playing on Krishna's emotions because he knows that Krishna cannot tolerate seeing his devotees suffer. Shisharup said, the gopis cried and lamented in so many ways, their limbs in terrible pain, their hearts shattered by sorrow. They fainted and fainted, and as if to go to the side of their Lord, they tried to enter the lake. Commentary. On the way to the lake, the gopis repeatedly fainted at the mere thought of Krishna's distress, and so they arrived last. The other ones fainted when they got there. They fainted before. Their hair was scattered, and their broken bangles and other ornaments scratched their arms. They tried to... This concept of broken bangles comes up a lot. I mean, they're wearing gold ornaments. The gold doesn't break. At maximum, it bends. Those conch-shelled ones that married girls wear, the conch-shell ones and the red ones, they're material. I guess they break. And they scratch their arms. They tried to enter the lake as if to join Krishna, but the real purpose was to drown themselves. Someone might question, how could these gopis who are worshipped why the wisest scholars in creation have been so ignorant of the Supreme Lord's power? The answer is that their minds were distracted by sorrow. It is unreasonable to think that the exalted gopis cannot suffer sorrow. In fact, they simply cannot bear to be apart from Krishna even for a minute. Okay, is that the answer? I mean, I guess so. Sanatana Swami says, but the answer is that their minds were distracted by sorrow. They're so ignorant of the Supreme Lord's power. They're not immediately thinking that he's the Supreme Lord, are they? Maybe if Krishna's power, he's killed so many demons. Comment?
How could these gopis who are worshipped by the wisest scholars in creation be so ignorant of the Supreme Lord's power? Answer is that their minds are distracted by sorrow. So the question is, how would they be conscious of the Supreme Lord's power in the first place?
Yeah, how would they be conscious that he's the Supreme Lord?
Yeah.
I mean, they're distracted. I mean, they're thinking, here's the Supreme Lord in danger, and now they're getting distracted. Otherwise, they think of Krishna as the Supreme Lord.
I don't know. I'm baffled on that one.
Oh, because... Yeah. Certainly.
One thing I'm trying to get my bearings again, because we haven't read this for a few. Sarupa is speaking. So Sarupa is speaking. He's identified as Sarupa, and he only became identified as Sarupa in Goloka. So he's talking about Goloka, isn't he? He's not talking about Gokul.
He's talking about Goloka. Yeah.
Yeah. Just want to make sure my bearings are straight here.
Mm.
He's talking about Goloka. Although at some point I think he's going to say there's no difference between the two.
Yeah. But the Leelas, all these Leelas are going on there.
Yeah.
That he's describing.
Yeah.
What happened when he went. This is what happened when I got back.
Yeah.
Action happens right away. Never a dull moment in Vaikuntha.
Doesn't skip a beat.
Yeah. Never a dull moment.
That's what I guess that's what you call hit the ground running.
Okay. Who's reading, me or you?
You were.
Oh. Suddenly, the Lord stopped his self-invented sport and freed himself from the grip of Kaliya's coils. He climbed up on the serpent's thousands of upraised, outspread hoods and extended his lotus arms. Commentary. To save the gopis from despair, Krishna extracted himself from the clutches of Kaliya's embrace. Before the girls could reach the water, he jumped up onto Kaliya's uncountable hoods and spread his arms to lift the gopis up to be with him, even though the gopis were out of arm's reach. He is Prabhu, and so can do anything he wants. He is never restricted by the laws of nature. Taking hold of all his beloved gopis at once, Krishna briskly raised them onto the hoods of the snake. Those hoods, delightfully swaying back and forth, appeared like rows of jeweled platforms, creating a most impressive sight. Krishna artfully danced with the gopis on the most amazing stages, accompanied by many celestial singers and musicians. Thus Lord Krishna, the source of all amusement, enjoyed his rasa dance pastime. I'm sure the gopis were all of a sudden on top of the snake. Dancing on top of the snake. I mean, there, something else took place there, you know, and all of a sudden they're on the, you know, I mean, they're afraid of snakes even when they see one. What to speak of now they're on top of this monster.
What to speak of the numbers of them on top of it. So probably this hood of the snake had to be so large.
Uncountable.
So that probably wasn't even...
kill them? I don't know. Who knows how many there were? There may have been a limited number, may have been many, but they certainly went through a certain transformation. What do you mean, dance here? How did we get here? Now all of a sudden we've got to convince
them. What's the trick of lifting them up?
Organize the whole thing and commentary. Never before had anyone seen such stages for dancing as these. To complement the festivities, many demigods, see, there's demigods, appeared in the sky overhead, singing and playing musical instruments. In this atmosphere, Krishna and the gopis fully enjoyed their dancing. The entire spectacle was created by the energies of Krishna, who is Kotu Karanava, the source of all entertainment. Well, write that down as a good name for a devotee. Kotu Karanava. Sri Nanda and other older cowherds, slow to recover from their deep shock, did not witness this rasa dance. Yeah, I mean, he says, gopis fully enjoyed their dancing. I mean, how, you know, gopis were aware they're on top of this huge snake and dancing at the same time. I'm sure there was a lot of mixed reactions to the whole proposal to start with.
What to speak of? It's inconceivable. But I guess he had to hold his head straight.
Swing. Snake swing. Nanda and the others on the shore, brought back to consciousness by Balaram, gazed at Krishna with delight and surprise. Commentary, even though Krishna was saved, the old cowherd boys were still wary of what else Kaliya might do. Okay, they did not witness the rasa dance, so now they're awake and...
The older cowherds were still wary of what else Kaliya might do.
And then the others on shore, brought back to consciousness, gazed at Krishna with delight and surprise. The older cowherds were still, but they were wary. But now, the gopis are on top of Kaliya. Having thus subdued the king of snakes, Krishna, grinning, seized the shawls of the serpent wives, the Nagapatnis, there around, who were offering him prayers. From these garments, he made a long rein with his left hand, playfully, the gopis must have, he must have sent them back. Someone knocked.
Come in. They usually never come in, even when I say come in.
I have this fantastic thing brought from England. It's a remote.
Oh, really? To unlock the door?
Button? No. It's a remote button that rings bells if you want someone. Come in. So the gopis must have, he must have put the gopis back if the idea was that they didn't see him dancing, then he also sends them back, and it's just him back there again. So when gazed at Krishna with delight and surprise, and having thus subdued the king of snakes, Krishna, grinning, sees the shawls of certain wives, the Nagapatnis, who were offering him prayers, because now they were offering him prayers. From these garments he made a long rein, and with his left hand playfully pierced and threaded Kaliya's nose. Mounting the serpent like a horse, Krishna toughly drove him forward, all the while with his right hand happily playing the flute. So the gopis are off now. From time to time, Krishna forcibly urged Kaliya on with the flute. He banged him with the flute as if it were a whip. Thus he showered great mercy on Kaliya by making that serpent his carrier. Commentary, having to carry Krishna like a horse is hardly a degrading punishment. Only rare souls like Garuda can have the honor of being the Supreme Lord's carriers. As the Nagapatni stated in their prayers to Krishna in the 10th canto. What you have done here, quote, is actually mercy for us, since The punishment you give to the wicked certainly drives away all their contamination. Indeed, because this conditioned soul, our husband, is so sinful that he assumed the body of a serpent, your anger towards him is obviously to be understood as your mercy. The Nagapatnis offered Krishna clothing, fragrant paste, flower garlands, and priceless jeweled ornaments, and Krishna placed these on the serpent's hoods. Then with the Padma, Utpal, and other lotus flowers, those wives had brought to offer him from the Jamuna, and with the same ornaments, he had already put on Kaliya. Krishna decorated the gopis and himself. Whoops. When the Nagapatnis presented ornaments to Krishna, he did not immediately put them on his own body. First he placed them on Kaliya's hoods, and then while he and the gopis were still standing.
Still on the hoods.
He decorated the gopis and himself.
So he had reigned, Kaliya, driving him forward, and the gopis were still there.
Hanging on for dear life. And probably shrieking and doing so many things. And meanwhile, everyone was watching. How did the gopis get there? When the Nagapatnis presented, still standing. While the king of serpents with his countless mouth recited prayers to Krishna, Krishna emerged from the lake, making all his friends and family dance with joy. With so many mouths, Kaliya could nicely offer prayers, and this way he was blessed by Krishna to become like Anantashesh. Together with a troop of young cowherd girls, most amazing Krishna dismounted Kaliya. He was together with a troop of cowherds. They were still there. The serpent was filled with happiness, for he had obtained great favors and benedictions difficult for even Garuda to achieve. Kaliya had good reason to be satisfied, for his heads had been graced by the presence of Krishna and the gopis, and Krishna offered him other benedictions, including the boon that Kaliya's hoods would always bear the auspicious mark of Krishna's feet. Krishna is the most amazing person because he shows such kindness even to wicked creatures like Kaliya. Krishna was drenched by a flood of joyful tears from the eyes of Nanda and the others, who absorbed themselves in worshipping and embracing him again and again. Krishna then mercifully gave the king of the serpents some instructions and exiled him from the lake. Commentary: Krishna's command is recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam. O serpent, you may not remain here any longer. Go back to the ocean immediately, accompanied by your retinue of children, wives, other relatives, and friends. Let this river be enjoyed by the cows and humans. If a mortal being attentively remembers my command to you to leave Vrindavan and go to the ocean, and narrates this account at sunrise and sunset, he will never be afraid of you. It's a little late.
Yeah.
Interesting. Imagine how, this is all real sort of summary in the way it's being described. But the gopis felt like going for a ride down the Jamuna. It's like a motorboat ride, just.
Doesn't also, I think elsewhere, it describes how Krishna tamed Zakeshi. Or is it Aristasura?
That comes later.
Yeah. Tamed them and used them as a domestic animal for riding.
The concept of who these demons are. I mean, I went to great lengths, and I think that was one good explanation, but maybe there are others I haven't read in Krishna Sangati. Hare Krishna, Yoga Maya Ki Jai. That was a good reading.
Yeah, it was.
Tavakatamritam.
I gotta do some research on this topic. I know you're too busy writing. I have time. I want to do some research on this topic.
That's what it's all about. Go deep. Go deep. Like Gorgo Vindamarash used to say, go deep. Uh-huh. And then it really absorbs the mind. And you just get lost in Krishna.